See, that's what I look more like these guys back here. This I should be playing a horror movie criminal. That's the look I got. I know who I am.
Yeah, he's a horror movie criminal.
I remember my agent sent me to an audition one time, and it's a bunch of guys that look like Brad Pitt. They got like the flowing hair.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm, what the fuck? This ain't.
Yeah.
What are you sending me to this for?
Right, right.
Yeah. I know who I am. I'm not afraid. I'm not scared. I'm not ashamed. That's where I belong. I need to get in these horror flicks. Be the bad guy.
That'd be great. Yeah. Would you be okay with that being masked, though, or would you want to be seen?
Oh, I'd be masked.
Yeah.
Being the part's the part. You know, I can do that.
Okay.
And there's no dialogue or anything to it, obviously, but it'd be a great experience, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, we're rolling. This is episode 9 already. Moving pretty quick. Today we bring in Dan Wells. You may have seen him in Straight Out of Compton and American Crime Story. How you doing, Dan?
Good. How you doing today, Mike?
Good, man. Appreciate you coming out here from Bakersfield.
No problem. Great day.
So this is going to be like a hybrid episode because you were in Straight Out of Compton, and I'm a huge F. Gary Gray fan, and I wanted to hear about your experience, that whole experience, from the audition, from you hearing about it, to just everything down the line, because I'm kind of fascinated with that and how that works.
Straight Out of Compton, to this point, has been the highlight of my career. And that whole experience was, you know, kind of surreal going through. When I first found out they were making that movie, I started you get on Facebook, you get on everywhere, ask, hey, I need to audition for this movie. And when I found out I finally had an audition for that movie, I'm on Facebook again asking people, please, does anybody know anybody? Help me.
What did you want to do in it? I mean, you didn't care.
I didn't care. I would have been a part of that movie no matter what. Okay. I knew, based on what the movie was about, who I am, I knew I'm going to be a cop in this film.
Right.
And I knew that's where I was going. I knew that's what I was headed to. But my main concern was getting in. I'd have taken anything they gave me.
Okay. So you get called in, or actually you go to the audition, mm-hmm. and is there a long line of cats there?
No, SAG audition, standard. It was pretty quick, in and out. As I was walking down the hallway leaving, they called me back in to do another part, which made me extremely happy because now I feel like, okay, they like what they saw. They call me back to do another one.
As you're leaving?
As I'm leaving. I left the door. I'm out. Lady comes following me down the hall, asks me if I'll come back and read for another part. I was ecstatic.
What'd you read for the first time? The first one? Was it the cop?
If you recall the movie, I believe the part I read for the first time was the part I played.
Okay.
But then they called me back in to read for the Detroit police officer who was giving them the warning regarding singing at the police.
At the concert,
I
right?
called. I came back and I read for that part again.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So then at that point, were you hoping or were you like, I'm probably not going to get this? Or what were you thinking?
It, like everything. I've been to auditions where I felt extremely positive, and that one I did feel extremely positive about.
Okay.
But I felt positive before and
right.
never heard from anybody again. So you go out with high hopes and you hope for the best.
So when they call you, they tell you, okay, you got X part. And you don't know exactly, or do you know exactly once they call you what you got?
When they call, the day they call me, they tell me you got the part. And
yeah.
I know I'm in the movie. I know I'm going to play in one of these cop roles. I didn't know exactly because they had me read for two parts. I didn't know which one I was going to be, but I didn't care.
Right.
Give me one of them and I'll be there. From there, the process starts. You know, you get called in for costume. You get called in to do different things leading up to the movie, up to shoot day. And
mm-hmm.
after that, it's just a pretty normal process. Up until the day you hit the set and you're
okay.
ready to shoot.
Okay, and then you were saying earlier that you thought you were going to play one role, and then F. Gary Gray was like, nah, I'm going to switch you over.
He did switch me at the last second. I was slated to play the cop in my scene that has a confrontation with Ice Cube's parents.
Okay.
That's where I was slated. That gentleman that played that role was slated to play the part I played.
Mm-hmm.
F. Gary Gray had different plans, and he switched us up right at the end as we got on set.
Did you have a problem with that? As far as, well, damn, do I
no.
look a certain way that they want me to do this?
I'm not going
to
question F. Gary Gray's process.
Okay.
F. Gary
awesome.
Gray
no.
had a process.
Right.
He's doing what he's doing. It's awkward
mm-hmm.
because I have lines that I've learned and now I've got to
okay.
adapt to something else. But, I mean, he knew that as well as I did, so he was good
okay.
with it.
Well, I guess not so much a problem with F. Gary Gray. I think, did you kind of think to yourself, well, do they want me to play this because they think I look? Like
I knew he wanted me to play that part because I'm bigger, meaner, okay. scarier looking than
right.
the other guy. And he wanted me to be the one slamming somebody down on the hood of the car. And
yeah.
hey, I'm good with that.
Okay. And where'd you shoot that at?
We shot that in right next to USC in
okay.
the neighborhoods right around there.
And how was that night?
Oh, it was long night, a lot of cuts to make room for the police helicopter flying up above. It was a great night though. Working with F. Gary Gray was a great night. We probably shot for 12 hours to get that one quick scene.
When I first saw the movie, right from that opening scene, where Eazy-E at the crack house there, this movie was different to me. It was more than a biopic. I just thought, and plus I'm a huge F. Gary Gray fan, and I felt that it was more of a saga. It was just like an epic movie. And as I was watching it, I saw you in there. I'm like, okay, this is going to work. Now I got another tie to it, you know, so this is great, man. I always guess that they're going to do ADR on a lot of stuff. I just don't know where and when. I just figure, well, how are you going to get past the cameraman's footsteps or, you know, cars passing by? And that night was pretty chaotic, right, with the chopper up above?
Yeah, anytime you're shooting on location in the middle of a city, mm-hmm. you're not going to avoid noise. You're going to have noise, and you're going to have to ADR it later.
Okay. Did you tell them during your audition that you were in law enforcement?
They knew I was an actual police officer. Yeah, when I go to the audition, I talk about that all the time. F. Gary Gray himself, no, he wasn't there for the actual audition. But yeah, they knew. I make that mm-hmm. available. I let them know that I am actually in law enforcement. And
any problems at your job because of this?
Oh yeah, I ended up problems I didn't think I'd have. I mean, I'd been acting for several years. The department I was working for at the time had never had a problem with it until I was in mm-hmm. Straight out of Compton.
Right.
And then I ended up in 8 months of internal affairs explaining myself for being in this movie. I still to this day don't understand the actual problem they had with it, other than they didn't like it. And I wouldn't say cost me my job, but I left the department because of it.
Probably because of Straight Outta Compton?
There was other stuff leading up to it. It was kind of a long time coming. That was the final straw.
Yeah.
Yeah. That said, they're too much in my personal life and what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get out.
Yeah. Cause I wouldn't think that's a conflict of interest. I mean, it's a totally different job. I mean, yeah, you're portraying your real job, but it's still a different line of work. I mean,
it's a movie. It's acting. And their trouble with it was they were afraid that I was going to reflect poorly on the department, and people were going to see me and think I'm really like that in real life. And, you know, my response to them was, you know, it's acting.
Right.
Every time some actor plays a murderer, the cops don't show up at his house the next day to check on him to make sure he didn't really murder anybody.
Yes.
It's a process. It's acting. And I can't blame it on everybody. Most people got it. And most people were great with it. There was a couple of higher ups at my department that had a ridiculous issue with it. And hey, that's them. And
yeah,
exactly. I moved on from it.
Okay. Now, being that you are in law enforcement and you work in Hollywood, watching some of these, cop stories, police stories, you see a lot of realism in there, or do they get it wrong?
No, it's very real. There's very little realism in Hollywood. But if you want to talk about the reality of being a police officer all the time, even cops is, you know, it's supposed to be reality TV, but they're taking minimal portions of what happens
mm-hmm.
in police work. Police work for the most part is a lot very boring.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times boring.
Yeah.
You couldn't make a reality. You couldn't make something that looks real off of what cops do on a day-to-day basis. It's not exciting boring. Enough.
Right.
Who's going to watch that for 2 hours?
What do you think is the closest movie to being realistic to you?
I know everybody was really into End of Watch, and End of Watch to me overall was not. But I love to watch the interaction between the two actors. To watch Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña in the vehicle when they're interacting as officers in a vehicle, that was spot on.
Right.
They killed it. And any cop that watched that enjoyed watching it just for that realism. But the rest of the movie, of course, they got to overblow it for Hollywood, which we understand. It
has to be,
We want to watch something exciting.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you make a movie out of a book, you know, you're going to leave out a lot of stuff because you can only condense it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you want to bore people. You know, you got to at least have some movement.
Visually, we got to be stimulated for 2 hours or...
Right.
You're going to lose your audience.
Okay. The scene where the officer, I think it's Michael Peña, fights my man inside the apartment. What do you think about something like that?
No, I couldn't see that happening, not without somebody getting seriously fired. But every cop's wanted to do that at some point or another.
Right.
But no, I've never seen that happen anywhere in my 20 years. And
yeah.
I don't think I ever would. Now, 30 years ago, prior to me, I could see cops doing that. It was a different time period, but no, that's not the kind of thing that I think I can't say it never happens. but
right,
it's not the kind of thing.
Okay, consulting on movies is very important, like with Heat. That I've been told, you know, it's one of my favorite movies, but I've been told that that's pretty realistic, and I think that has a lot to do with the consulting.
As far as the movements of the actors and stuff, Heat's a movie that cops love to look to because the way people shoot their guns, the way things are done in that movie, it's just, it's a lot of it's technically accurate and it looks really good.
What about like the blood splatter and the blood everywhere in movies in general, you know, what do you think?
A lot of crime. I've been on crime scenes that were pretty bad and I've been on ones that weren't. It's more of the, when you're talking about police work and what's reality on TV, it's more of the overall amount of excitement.
People, yeah. You know,
police work is very exciting on TV. Police work in real life is a lot of downtime, a lot of boring time. That's where it gets to be a big discrepancy.
And then you worked on American Crime Story. That was about Versace, correct?
Yeah, the assassination of Gianni Versace.
And what was that like?
That was a great experience. It was a wonderful experience working. You know, got to fly back to Chicago for a couple of days and shoot. They were pretty accurate on there, but of course they had a story to go by.
Yeah.
So they're telling a story. I can't think of his name. The young guy that played Andrew Cunanan did an amazing job. Got to work with Judith Light, which if you're a kid growing up in the '80s, you watch Who's the Boss.
Yep.
Loved her. Got a picture with her. Loved her. One of the sweetest people I've ever met. That was an amazing experience working on that, and to see something you've done, even though you're only a small part of it, to see something you've done blow up and do so well, mm-hmm. that you were even a small part of
makes you proud.
You were saying earlier that the horror movies before, when you watch them now, and I know you said there's a little age in there, but they said they're not the same type of fear or the same type of a suspense you got. What do you think is the catalyst for that? What is the...
I have to say, I think it's just more age and growing up. I miss that, being a kid and feeling extremely terrified by watching a movie. I liked horror movies when I was a kid. I liked being afraid. I liked watching. And I miss having that feeling of fear that you had when you were a kid. For me, it's real hard to watch horror movies now and not just say, oh, it's fake.
Right.
I hate the idea of it, but it's just the way it is. And there are still horror movies I watch that I really enjoy. I love anything by Rob Zombie. I've watched, you know, House of a Thousand Corpses. Everything I've seen by Rob Zombie, I just like the way he does things. The dynamics, everything it does. There's still horror movies I enjoy. I just miss that unknown fear you had when you were a kid because you really thought something was going to jump out. You know, I miss walking down the hall after watching a movie and going, what's behind that door?
Right.
I miss that feeling.
It's a desensitization, I think. Especially your line of work, you probably see all kinds of real life horror stories. And
making horror movies, I think you can still, you get some of that because maybe you're not feeling it, but you're scaring people.
Right.
You know, you're bringing that to somebody else. And I think it's any horror movie director or producer that can bring that together and still get that dynamic out of people is doing great.
And it's all the setting too. I've talked about this before on, I think, a couple other episodes. It's all the setting you're in. Like if you watch a movie by yourself when it's quiet, a scary movie with good sound, there's far more potential of you being a little frightened, a little scared. But if you're watching it, you know, if we put a scary movie on right here with these lights on, you know,
and us three watching it together.
Yeah. It's just not the same, you know. I mean, as a kid, I remember I was scared of The Exorcist. Seeing her, you know, just visions of her laying in that bed, and I'd go to my room and there's my bed, you know, and I really wouldn't want to look towards it too much. But now, you know, now it's more of a game, I think. It's more fun. You know, scary movies to me are more fun now. You know, every now and then you'll get a few good ones that come along. Like I think Don't Breathe and Evil Dead; those are more modern ones. Those I think were a little more frightening to me. And remakes too. I mean, they're messing up a lot of remakes now, right?
I'm not a fan of the remakes. I don't think I've seen a remake yet that I thought was as good as the original film.
Yeah.
And I wish they'd just quit doing it. There's nothing wrong with original ideas. Come up with something original.
Yeah, like Poltergeist reboot, I didn't care for. The Nightmare on Elm Street reboot, I didn't care for. Now, the Friday the 13th, that came out in 2009. I actually thought it was pretty good for a reboot.
I missed that one. I did watch the new Halloween.
What'd you think?
And I thought it was a good film. Like I said, it probably would have scared me more when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a decent film. And I liked the way they took it back to Mike Myers as an actual person.
Right.
homicidal maniac as opposed to
all the shit they had him.
Yeah, whatever they did back then.
Yeah.
I thought Jamie Lee Curtis came back and did a good job for what she was brought back to do. I thought she did a good job.
She was ferocious, man.
I mean, when I was a kid, I watched a lot of the movies that everybody would know about. I liked the Friday the 13th movies. Yeah. I watched the Halloween movies, Nightmare on Elm Street. Everybody loved Freddy Krueger when we were little. But I think my favorite stuff was a lot of the offshot stuff, the horror movies that you didn't hear a whole lot about, that you'd be laying at home one night and this crap comes on TV and you're like, I'm gonna check this out. And a lot of it I couldn't even name for you right now, but that was the kind of stuff I enjoyed watching when I was a kid.
You still watch The Walking Dead then, huh?
I do watch The Walking Dead. I'm still a fan. I'm hanging in there.
How's that going?
I think they did a lot this year to bring it back to where it needed to be, but I think they'd be good to end it, to pick a point and end it.
So I watched the first three seasons of it, and then I just stopped. A lot of those characters are gone now, I guess. His wife, Rick's wife. Is his son still gone?
No.
He's gone, too.
He's gone. Rick's gone.
See? Okay, and how's it going without him?
It's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
That vibe's gone. When you get rid of the main character that's been the main character on a TV show for so long.
Yeah.
You know, they've tried to do it. Two and a Half Men. Shows have tried to do it before, no matter what kind of show they are. When you get rid of the main character, you've changed the story.
How long has he been gone?
Just this past season.
Oh, okay. So now they're just continuing on with a new group. And
yeah. They left it open for him to return. It's not like he died.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's not the same story without him.
What about the other guy?
Daryl?
Daryl.
Daryl's hanging strong. I think the only reason Daryl's hanging strong is because they'd lose their fan base if they lost Daryl. They know there's a lot of people barely hanging on right now, and if Daryl Dixon was gone, it'd be the end of that show.
Okay. And then now there's spinoffs too, right, in different cities?
Yeah, I've tried watching a couple of them. I tried watching one, the first one they did, The Fear of the Walking Dead.
And yeah.
I just couldn't get into it like the original.
So if you were able to play, let's say you're like a scary type villain, what demeanor do you want to set for that?
If I was to get back to what I wanted to do, the things I like, the Rob Zombie films, the Captain Spaulding characters, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, those are the people that I look at and I go, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
That'd be fun to play. It'd be fun to look at.
You know, as a Michael Myers fan, a Halloween fan, a lot of people didn't like what he did with those. But I like the first one. Second one, but the first one, he's just kind of all over the place, erratic, what's going on. And I didn't have a problem with that. I haven't seen House of a Thousand Corpses yet. The
Devil's Rejects.
Devil's Rejects.
That's a freaking movie. I love that kind of movie. The style, just crazy, but it's not, you know, it's going back to the Halloween and the Friday the 13th. It's not some supernatural. It's just crazy people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of stuff you could look at and go, okay, if anything was to really happen, these crazy people.
Yeah.
Well, you can watch his movies. You can watch how these people are acting. Not when they're killing people, just how they're acting. You can walk down Hollywood Boulevard and see people acting like that any time of day. And you're going, holy, you know, who is this guy?
When did you start wanting to get into acting anyway? Was it an early thing with you?
It was. I did some theater in high school and stuff like that and always really enjoyed it. Then when I went off to college and stuff like that, I just forgot about it. I come from a small town about 2 hours north of Hollywood, or north of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I think if you don't grow up in it, it just seems so far away. And then when I was about 10, 12 years ago, I just decided, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try it myself. And I figured it out myself and got into it. I think I'm doing all right for where I came from.
Yeah, for sure. Are you content with the roles you've been getting, or would you like to be more into more dramatic, you know?
Being a real police officer, I get typecast a lot.
Sure.
And I don't mind that at all, you know? Yeah. I'll play a cop all day long, but I'd like to branch out a little bit and do a little more.
Like a horror movie.
Yeah, I'd love to do a horror movie. Okay. I'd love to do more of a horror movie and not just where I'm the cop in the horror movie.
Yeah.
But actually do something a little more creative.
Like the victim, or would you want to be like
either way, but I love the villain. I love the bad guy. I love, especially in a horror movie, mm-hmm. the guy. Hey, who doesn't want to be the killer in a fantasy situation?
Yep.
For me, I mean, I get teased about a lot to say that acting as a police officer is kind of a stretch, I guess. I mean, I'm stepping into a role I've been doing for years. to prep for being that type of person, it's, there's a lot out there to see. There's a lot of documentaries and a lot of stuff for, and you can get in the mind of a serial killer on just about any documentary.
Yep.
Any, you can find them all over the place. But I mean, creating that character in your own mind is how you got to get into it. And you just got to, you got to want it. You got to go do it.
Okay. So that was 1,000 Ways to Die. And tell me about that shoot. How that went.
1,000 Ways to Die was a great, like I said, it was a great shoot. It's reenactment show for the most part. So there's no script. You're just kind of going along. The director's giving you some directions. You guys are making it up as you go along.
But
it's just a fun, it's a fun way to spend a day shooting a TV show. And I got a lot of good exposure out of that. And that was actually one, when I first did that show, I had never heard of it. And at that point, not too many people knew what I did, knew what I was going to Hollywood for. And I was sitting with a buddy of mine at lunch, and he asked me if I'd done anything recently. He knew. And I said, I did 1,000 Ways to Die. And he said, oh, I love that show. My boys and I watched it all the time. And that's when I first had to start telling people, okay, I've been acting in Hollywood, because I was like, okay, people are going to actually see this. And see me on TV. And I did. I got some exposure out of that one.
So what was that? What was that episode?
It was called M.R. Ouch. Or nurse case scenario, something along that. They changed it. But
what was the premise and what happened?
It was, I played a drug user who breaks into a hospital in the middle of the night and confronts the acting on duty nurse.
Okay.
Who happens to be a very attractive female, and, you know, uses her sexuality to lure me into a certain situation.
Okay.
And killed by getting sucked into an MRI machine because of a metal plate in my head. I can't vouch for the accuracy of it, but it's supposed to be real.
Okay.
It was a great shoot.
Wow, I want to check that. Was that a full day?
Oh, that was a full day shooting. We, I mean, we shot, those aren't full episodes. Like, they're not 30 minutes long. In every 30 minute episode of 1,000 Ways to Die, there's three different scenarios. So you're a, you know, eight minute set or something. That's, they're supposed to be true. I don't know how much all of them are, because there's some cheesy ones. Mine was ridiculous.
Okay.
But I did, there was a poll on, there's a YouTube poll of the best 1,000 Ways to Die segments.
Okay.
The top 10 best ever. And we were number one.
Wow.
So, is that right?
Yeah. There's, the one we did was number one. It was very pop. Well, there's a good looking girl in her bra and panties, which
in that,
adds to, you know, that's pretty much the draw to number one, I think. I don't think it had much to do with me. But but to be in that, to I'm looking at that poll and we were coming out number one, I'm going, that's pretty cool.
What else have you done?
I mean, small parts. I've been on a lot of shows. Bones, Castle.
Bones.
Did a run on General Hospital for a little while as a henchman.
How was that? What was that like, man?
I can tell you what, shooting soap operas, I could do that all the time. They're very quick. The way they shoot, it's not like shooting anything else, because they do so many of them. They're not.
So what do they do?
For time.
Okay, so they call you in.
They call you in and they say go.
And that's it.
You may do two takes of a certain scene. You feed your line. You may do it, like I said, maybe two times.
And no ADR on that stuff?
Just no.
Done?
It's come in, you do it, it's done. We're, everything's shot on set right there.
Is that paid, the soap operas pay decent? For,
yeah, I mean,
yeah, okay.
For a day's work, better than you're going to make another job.
What about Bones?
Bones was a great experience. Worked one day, another one day shoot on that set. Mm-hmm. Good experience, played a bailiff in a federal court. And got a couple lines.
Okay.
On, got to work. One of my favorite experiences working in Hollywood was, I did do a day on, a couple of days actually, on the set of Legit with Jim Jeffries, comedian.
Yeah.
And man, had an amazing time. Jim Jeffries is a funny guy all the time, and had a great time working with him. I actually met, the way I met Adam, I think the first time I ever met him, we did a show together for one of those networks, because 1,000 Ways to Die, all those are on the same network, those reenactment shows. And Adam and I did a reenactment show together where we were Nazi soldiers.
Really?
And in America, it was like, what if the Nazis had won type thing? And we did the show. And it was the only episode that we ever, the show that ever got made and aired and then never showed again. But
do you have lines in it?
Again, on the reenactment shows, you'll have lines that you just kind of make up as you go along. And if some of them make them in, they may not, but.
But does that affect you pay-wise if they do, the lines do get in?
That's, that's all non-union stuff, so you're making a minimal.
So it doesn't matter.
Minimal budget anyway.
Wow. Okay, cool. And what about now? You got anything in the works?
Nothing right now. Just working right now, working on some writing, stuff like that. Some of my own stuff, but nothing in the works right now. I need to get going again. I need to get back into it.
You said that you had auditioned for John Singleton. What was that like?
That I consider to be a highlight of my career just because of who he was. I mean, I got to go in one day. I had an audition for this part. I don't even know what the movie was. But I had an audition, got a call back, and was told the audition would be in front of John Singleton himself. And one of the nicest guys came out, talked to us all before the audition even, you know, jived with us, made sure we were all comfortable, went in to do the audition in front of him, and gives you good feedback. I consider myself lucky that I got to audition for that guy before he passed away. It was sad to hear that, because after auditioning for him once, I wish I could have got the chance to work for him.
Yeah, work for him, check out his whole process and everything.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah, just meeting him that day was it was a big honor, yeah.
So Solved, that was one of those reenactment shows, right? And
yeah, when you start out in acting, there's a lot of reenactment shows out there that are a good way to get involved.
How was that?
You know what? They're a lot of fun. I got typecast a lot back in those days because of the cop thing, being a cop. Mm-hmm. So I would put myself out there for all these reenactment shows, and they would call me to come do them. But it's a good way to get started. It's a good way to start building your resume, and it's a good way to get seen on TV. There's no script. It's a kind of a do-it-as-you-go type thing, the way they shoot it.
But is that what they tell you? Like, hey, there's no script, so...
No, they kind of tell, they tell you what the action is.
Yeah.
This is the action. This is what we're doing. You know, and they'll throw something at you like, say this.
Right.
And then play on it. Okay. And you kind of make it up as you go, and you kind of do your own thing, but you got to be able to ad-lib a little bit.
And you were on, what, 4 of those, you said?
Oh, I was on several of those. I was probably on Solved 3 or 4 times. I was on Call 911 3 or 4 times.
And is it the same, like on Solved, are you the same guy every time?
No, you're somebody different every time.
Okay.
I don't think they care too much. These are non-union shows, small shows that are on, you know, obscure networks. And
yeah.
But they're good shows. And like I said, if you need to build a resume, they're a real good way to build a resume and to get yourself seen on TV.
And 911 was another one, right?
Call 911.
Call 911?
Yeah. All dealing with real situations and just reenacting them for the public.
Yeah, sounds like a good way to build, stack a resume. I mean, if you can do multiples, right?
They've had a reenactment show about everything.
Yeah. A lot of them
supposed to be reality TV.
Supposedly, right? Yeah.
What aspects would you want to get in behind the scenes as far as filmmaking and writing?
I'd love to get into consulting more. After, you know, 20 years of law enforcement experience, I've done a lot, and 10 years in Hollywood, I've watched a lot of what's the interaction between consultants and directors, and I'd like to give the information I have. I'd like to be somebody who could get on scene and help them make something look real, help them bring a bit of reality to what it's like to work in law enforcement.
I wonder if there's a fine line, though, in between real and not. Because like you talked about before, you gotta make it, you know, watchable for people. But at the same time, if you keep it real, you keep the scenes looking real, does that take away from the entertainment value?
As far as the reality, there's little nuances that you can make look real within the scene. Like I say, you're never going to have a cop show that's 100% real because it's boring.
Right.
But there are little nuances within the scenes, how things are done, how people look when they hold the gun, how people look when they handcuff somebody, how people look when they search a room, that they look better when they're done right.
Sure.
At least from a cop's perspective, they look better when they're done right. I love that aspect of it, and I'd like to get more involved, because it looks, when it's done wrong, it looks bad.
It looks bad. You know, I was watching the making of Rob Zombie's Halloween, and they had some Pasadena PD come to set. And I remember the officer telling one of the guys, like, never to hold a gun like this. Because he was going through the hallways, like, he was like, pointed straight down. He's, you know, I guess you can hit some shit coming up. So that was interesting. It was two officers that came to help out with that. And, you know, to me, it made the scene that much better.
If you have, if you got your gun out, you're aiming it at something.
Right.
It's little nuances like that.
The whole time, right?
Pretty much. You're aiming until it's time to put it away.
Okay. I remember when we shot Gray, I think when you were holding the gun, you had the finger.
Yeah, there's some reality that people that they don't want, that you have to.
Right.
You kind of have to give it up the director on that. Some safety concerns and stuff that we as officers do in real life that they don't want to see, because they want you to.
Yeah.
It's got to have that excitement to it.
Yeah, I remember you and Sean were joking about that. Like, that was a training thing. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, to keep it.
Yeah, finger outside the trigger guard is something we, when you're watching, you can kind of tell who knows their way around firearms and who doesn't. The way they hold it and the way they handle it. Who's a full-time actor?
Right.
By the way they handle a firearm.
And like Heat, right? Heat was an
Heat was a great movie. Was a great example of the little things, how a gun was held.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how people reacted when being shot at, or Heat's a movie that a lot of cops like to turn to as realistic, which is, it's one of the few.
Okay.
Even the tactical portion, like when they're chasing down and they're, you know, sectioned down, they're trying to, you know, track down the criminals.
Yeah, Heat. I don't know who worked on Heat, but whoever did a great job of giving them good tactical advice. You know, the bank robber shooting, the L.A. bank robber shooting, where the guys were, armored down from head to toe. Yep. I've never seen them. I don't know if they've ever made a...
Yeah, they did with Van Peebles, Mario Van Peebles.
Yeah. You've got that whole thing is outlined for you on live camera from
news feeds
and stuff. You could see it. Why not use that and make it
part
of what you refer to?
In 97.
Yeah, that was after, right?
That was after Heat was 95.
So I was wondering what they got a copycat idea then.
Maybe. I went down there, man. Me and my buddy went down there and checked out everything, you know? Yeah. And, obviously everything looks smaller when you get there.
It's intense to watch on TV, though.
Yeah. Oh, they were dumping, man.
Yeah.
And we went to a 31 Flavors that's right there. This kid was working, and he's like, check this out. And he actually brought us to the back. His freezer, this was probably maybe 10 years later. The freezer still had a bullet hole that came through the wall through the steel freezer.
Wow.
Right? And, man, they were dumping, and I don't think anyone else got killed outside of those two guys, right?
No. There was a couple officers that were struck, but I don't think nobody died.
Yeah, but that was a trip, like, man. So, anyways, Dan, I appreciate you coming down here and being a part of this.
No problem, man. I appreciate you having me down here.
All right. Dan Wells, everyone, actor, consultant, whatever you need. Thank you.